Welcome to the Chris Raby Show on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. It is the Wednesday, April 14th, 2021 edition of the program. We are broadcasting from the Ophthalmology Associates Studios. The doctors at Ophthalmology Associates want to help you see your best. Go to YourEyeDoc.com, YourEyeDoc.com, and see what the doctors, including Dr. Greg Birdie, Dr. Ranjan Malhotra, Dr. Robert Brasati, and Dr. Andrew Royer can do for you. They're called the doctors at the Ophthalmology Associates because more doctors trust them with their eyes than anyone else. So shouldn't you trust Ophthalmology Associates? You know, during baseball season, you want to keep your eye on the ball. You want to make sure that you're seeing things well on the golf course, watching your kids play sports, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, your eyesight is too important not to trust it to the best. And the best, the doctors are at Ophthalmology Associates. So schedule a consultation, whether or not you're having issues. Schedule your annual exam. Insurance will cover it. Your eyes deserve the doctors. Give them a call at 314-966-5000. Tell them that Chris Raby sent you from the Chris Raby Show on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. You can also visit their website at YourEyeDoc.com, 314-966-5000, YourEyeDoc.com. Tell them that Chris Raby sent you from the Chris Raby Show on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. All right, so we are going to talk a little baseball today. We're going to talk a little golf as well. Speaking of baseball and golf, Scott Miller will join us to talk a little baseball in just a moment. And then Rick Gaiman from RickRungood.com will talk a little golf with us as we are moving on from the Masters and headed to the RBC Heritage at Hilton Head, South Carolina. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can always tweet me. Tweet me at C-H-R-A-B-E, C-H-R-A-B-E. You can email me, Chris, at ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe to Scoops with Danny Mac on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all of that good stuff. All right, let's head out west and say hello to our guy, Scott Miller. Of course, you can follow him on Twitter at ScottMillerBBL. You've read him all over the place. You hear him all over the place, including here on Scoops with Danny Mac, Sirius XM MLB Network Radio. Scott, what's going on, man? Happy, so far, pretty much uneventful first couple of weeks of the season, which I think is a good thing.
Yes, especially compared to last year when, A, it was an abbreviated 60-game season that did not even start till late July in this pandemic, and B, that the first week of the season last year that was delayed. You know, we had those, you know, the Marlins and then the Cardinals had those COVID outbreaks, and, you know, the schedule a week in was already upended. So, yeah, so far there have been a couple minor blemishes, but or I should say minor blips on the screen, but mostly pretty good so far. And I think we'll take uneventful this year.
Yeah, uneventful. And I guess the flip side of that coin, Scott, is that with all of the maybe time and energy spent thinking about, for fans especially, whether or not the season's going to start and if we're going to have baseball, I guess the flip side is, well, we still aren't sure about like a universal DH, and a rule like that hanging in the balance would be maybe a bit more of a storyline in years past.
Yeah, it probably would. That, I think that in this, you know, doubleheaders that are seven innings and extra innings starting right away in the 10th inning or with a runner on second base, you know, those are, you know, all three of those, the DH and the two I just mentioned, are fairly significant. And you're right, in non-pandemic times, baseball fans would be fiercely debating that 24/7, but you know, it just, these are different times right now. And I anticipate the, like most people do, that the universal DH will probably be here to stay with the next collective bargaining agreement. As far as the other rules, I'd like to see a couple of those go away once the pandemic ends and we return to normal. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, Scott. Like, to this point, as we now have, I guess, what, 13 months of pandemic for the most part under our belts. When you think about sports and baseball, whether it's a change in something that you didn't expect the game to embrace or implement smoothly, you mentioned the couple of rules you hope go back the other way. Is there anything that has been changed or a way that we've been forced to adapt within the game that you think has worked pretty well, or parts of something that you think have worked pretty well?
Probably what I find interesting is many even so-called purists are coming around on the start extra innings with the runner on second rule. Partly because there's just the pace of the game. You know, there are issues with it. There's no question. There's way too much dead time in today's game. I still cringe with when in between pitches, you know, you see an outfielder pull out an index card from his back pocket, or even the other day, you know, I saw a relief pitcher step off the mound and pull a card out of his cap to double check some scouting stuff for the hitter he was about to face. And stuff like that just slows the game down. And, there's too much, you know, for me, there's not enough let the players play, and there's too much, you know, micromanaging of every single pitch and every single batter. So that whole diatribe, by the way, I didn't mean to get off on, but that all has to do with pace of play.
No, yeah. I get it. And it's exacerbated by the fact that the game right now is at a point where when there is play, a lot of times the ball isn't in play.
Well, no question. And I mean, I would say we've got some of the best athletes we've ever had in the game. I just wish, you know, the whole three true outcome thing, the strikeout, walk, or home run. Yeah, I know I'm not alone wishing there were far more balls in play. I mean, you know, they're in St. Louis. You know, the Cardinals just acquired Nolan Arenado at third base, and you've already gotten a little bit of a taste of him on an everyday basis. But, you know, as far as not enough balls being put in play, I mean, my goodness, the more balls we can get in play so that a guy like Nolan Arenado or Fernando Tatis Jr. in San Diego or Francisco Lindor in New York, so they can show off their defensive skills. I mean, that's part of the excitement of the game. And that's, to me, why there's such a crying need to do what we can to lessen the three true outcomes. But, you know, you had asked me about rule changes in the pandemic that, you know, I can live with. I mentioned, you know, I'm not thrilled with starting the extra innings with the runner on second. However, a lot of purists, so-called purists, have come to like it. And I don't hate it like I thought I would. I'm not necessarily advocating it, but the reason I think that's become a little bit popular is because it immediately adds drama to the game. And also, it adds some strategy. You know, you see every now and then you'll see teams now try to bunt a runner over to third or play small ball to score the runner from second that starts on extra, you know, that was placed there to begin the extra inning. And from that perspective, I like the drama and the strategy that sometimes injects into the game. I'm not necessarily saying I'd wish that would stay forever, but let's say this. If baseball is going to keep that rule, and I don't know if they are or not, at the very least, I hope they push it back so that, you know, if it does become a permanent part of the game, the runner on second maybe doesn't start with the 10th inning, but let's at least hold off till maybe the 13th or something like that.
Yeah, Scott Miller is with us on the Chris Raby Show. You mentioned young star players and talent in the game out west, out in San Diego, where you are. It appears that there is some optimism that Fernando Tatis Jr. could be back perhaps a lot earlier than originally expected, maybe even as soon as the Dodgers series. That's just, in my opinion, Scott, great for the game of baseball and great for, you know, baseball at this stage right now if Tatis is able to come back and be healthy, because, you know, watching what Acuña has done already this year and Soto and some of the young pitching performances we've seen. I mean, I think that in a time when, like you said, baseball is different, but baseball is also on display more than ever. That's exactly what the game needs. Even if it came at the expense of the Cardinals postseason last year, I am licking my chops, hoping he gets back very, very soon. What can you tell us?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm glad you said that, Chris, because, you know, I've done a few interviews since Tatis Jr. went down with that left shoulder injury. And that's been my point. You know, people have asked, you know, what about the Padres? And I'm like, you know, yeah, Tatis Jr. is very important to the Padres, but I hope he comes back soon and isn't lost for the season, more for the game of baseball than just for the Padres. I totally agree with what you just said, because he's, you know, it's not often you have a guy from San Diego go national in terms of grabbing the national consciousness of the baseball fans and becoming one of the most popular players in the game. So the good news, Chris, for baseball and for the Padres is, yes, the latest is he's on the road with the team right now. He was in Texas. They're in Pittsburgh, ready to play the third of a four-game series today. And he's on the road. He's working out before games. He's taking swings. He took some swings in a simulated game on Tuesday. And it all signs right now do indicate that when the 10 days are up that he's on the injured list, he's eligible to be activated on Friday, as you mentioned. That's the first game of a weekend set against the Dodgers. And right now, all signs indicate that he will be activated then. Now, hopefully he plays the rest of the year. That left shoulder, the in a nutshell, what the structurally the x-rays found, everything's good, so that's all good. But there is a small tear in his labrum of his left shoulder. Now, good news is he's a right-hander. It's not his throwing shoulder, so he can still play shortstop and everything. But, you know, the bad news is he was injured 10 days ago or 8 days ago on a swing, a violent swing, a swing and a miss. And so the worry is that if this happens again, then it could lead to surgery. I think he's going to need postseason surgery anyway. But, you know, he walked off the field the last 2 weeks of spring training, about 2 weeks before the end of the camp, during a league game. He left in the middle of a game with that shoulder hurting. And then now this. So this is the second time in a month or 6 weeks that he's hurt that shoulder. So the key is going to be, hopefully he comes back Friday, and then can they manage it and keep it in enough shape that he can play through the season?
Yeah, the Padres are such an interesting case study, because I think as like a fan, especially right now, they're exactly what you want. And, you know, we saw the Padres lead the way. Really, I think with the aggressiveness in the offseason and the handful of teams, Scott, really in the National League, kind of pushed their chips in to some extent. You know, the Cardinals making the big move as well. Obviously, the Dodgers consistently, the Mets with the trade for Lindor. But even the last couple of days, if you're a fan of a team in the National League Central or the Cardinals, you're saying, thank goodness, because you're watching Joe Musgrove throw the first no-hitter in franchise history. How cool is a San Diego kid to do that? You're watching Yu Darvish continue to do what he's done over the last couple of years and do it in the National League West. And, man, they're just an unbelievably fun team to watch. And just, I don't know what more you could ask for as a fan to see the way they've operated, the way that they've built the organization, built the farm system, and now utilize their assets to get to where they are.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Chris. They are. I mean, that's, you know, and I obviously see a lot of the Padres because I'm based here. And, you know, after many years of just mediocrity or poor teams, to your point about how fun they are, seeing them so often, every night they've got something compelling to watch. You know, they're almost must-see TV because, as you mentioned, tonight, against Pittsburgh, Joe Musgrove makes his first start since that no-hitter. You know, he threw 112 pitches last time. It's so early in the season. I doubt if we're going to see, as usual, anybody replicate Johnny Vandermeer and throw two no-hitters in a row. But, you know, tune in tonight, at least until the first hit, right? You know, last night Blake Snell started. He didn't look good. He didn't get out of the first inning. But, you know, here's a guy that won the American League Cy Young in 2018. You know, one night you get Snell on the mound. One night you get Darvish on the mound. One night you get Joe Musgrove on the mound. Dinelson Lamet is within a couple weeks of coming back. He's the kid that couldn't answer the bell in that playoff series against the Cardinals last year. And his season ended prematurely with some arm issues, and they've slow played him this year. But Lamet finished fourth in the National League in Cy Young voting last year.
Even Manny Machado is like flying under the radar a little bit right now. It's crazy just because of the roster.
Right. Eric Hosmer. I mean, you know, two-time World Series, you know, one-time winner, two-time participant with the Royals in 14 and 15. And, you know, on and on it goes. I mean, Tommy Pham is off to a really rough start. He's not hitting right now. And I know he's another very familiar name in your part of the country. But, you know, I mean, they've just got so many interesting different pieces aside from some of the names we've mentioned that, they are fun. They're interesting. And Victor Caratini, I should throw him in there simply because, you know, they acquired him from the Cubs in the Yu Darvish trade. And that was the other thing with the Musgrove no-hitter. Caratini was behind the plate. Now you got another weird baseball quirky story where the last two no-hitters thrown in the game, Caratini was behind the plate because he was the catcher when the Cubs' Alec Mills threw the no-no last year.
You know, we've seen obviously some great years, and I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but – you know, we've seen this done before in sports where, you know, organizations that have gone through maybe lean times in recent history, bring in the right type of people running things, whether it be, you know, in Golden State with the Warriors or the way the Chiefs have been revitalized after Andy Reid came in and, you know, they draft a franchise player in Mahomes and put pieces around him. If you're an organization and especially a city and an infrastructure that kind of sells itself, if you get, no pun intended, the ball rolling, the sky's kind of the limit. And I think that, you know, in terms of I don't even really want to call it a rebuild, but just an injection of talent from top to bottom and acquiring guys in all different ways, they're kind of the model and the template right now.
Yeah.
I guess the Dodgers as well, because the way they've done it and the way they've made acquisitions while holding on to some of their blue chip prospects.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, Chris. You know, the Dodgers have set the bar. They won 8 National League West titles in a row. They're favored to win number 9 this year. So basically what's happened, you know, over that time, the Padres and everybody else, really everybody in the National League, I mean, this extends to St. Louis, it extends to Atlanta. Everybody in the National League, I think, you know, the Dodgers have served notice that if you have any aspiration to win the National League pennant, the Dodgers set the bar. That's how you measure yourself. You've got to build a team that can catapult past the Dodgers. In that sense, it reminds me a little bit of the Yankees and Red Sox in right around 2000. Not comparing completely because those fan bases are completely different. The Yankees Red Sox rivalry that's gone back for so long, but you know, the Yankees dominated. They won the World Series in 96. They won it again in 98, 99 and 2000. Red Sox still were under that curse of the Bambino. They hadn't won it forever, but they were getting better, but they realized the Yankees just were clobbering everybody. Yeah. And that's how you measured yourself. You had to beat a team. You had to build a team that could get past the Yankees, you know, with Paul O'Neill and Bernie Williams and Derek Jeter, and you had to build a team better than that. And that's what's going on right now, and that's what's going to make this Padres-Dodgers race so fun this summer. The first of 19 games this Friday, because, you know, the Padres are legit, and the Dodgers, they obviously have noticed what the Padres have done. They signed Trevor Bauer off the free agent pile late in the winter after, you know, they watched the Padres acquire Darvish, Snell, and Musgrove.
Yeah, it's a fun time right now, and it's fun to see some of the aggressiveness, and I hope that it carries on into the summer and up to the trade deadline because, you know, right now, just, you're right, man, you turn on the TV and you watch the talent that's on display every night, and, you know, it's more than anything, I just hope that, knock on wood, we continue to roll along, because this is as good a product, I think, as the game has had in a really long time, and fans are very, very lucky right now.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's, you know, I mean, how good is it these days? We're early enough in the season. Seems like every day, you know, there are a handful of day games, and, you know, boy,
Can
watch baseball during the day, you know, and then all night till you go to bed, and you've got so many good players and teams, you know, from afternoon to evening.
Well, Padres and Dodgers this weekend, and always great to chat baseball with Scott Miller. Of course, follow him on Twitter. Check him out everywhere. And, you know, I'll say this. You started our conversation, Scott, saying that last year at this time we were, I guess, dealing with no baseball. Once the season started, we were dealing with stoppages. If there is, for any team, a delay or a stoppage or a slight pause button due to COVID or anything else, may it come in San Diego, perhaps, rather than a haunted hotel in Milwaukee, where the Cardinals had the good fortune of spending a week plus last year.
Oh, my goodness. How about that? I think especially those Cardinals personnel are never going to forget being stuck in that hotel for that length of time.
Well, here's to things rolling along. Good to talk to you, my friend. We'll talk soon. Thanks, Scott.
Chris, thank you. I enjoyed it.
All right, Rick Gaiman coming up in just a moment. I was talking to someone the other day, and we were talking about LASIK, because I have been contemplating for quite some time LASIK, and I'm thinking about taking the plunge, and I guess that's the first thing. It's not even really a plunge anymore. I think there are a bunch of misconceptions that people have or have had about the procedure, because you just don't know. You need to talk to the doctors at Ophthalmology Associates. Let them tell you if you're a candidate for the procedure. Let the doctors, the experts, tell you what happens before the procedure, after the procedure. Don't rely on secondhand, outdated information or incorrect information anymore. That's one example of why you should trust the doctors at Ophthalmology Associates. I want you to give them a call at 314-966-5000 and set up a consultation. If you're thinking about LASIK, if you just want your annual eye exam, whether or not you're having any issues, your eyes deserve the best, and you deserve the doctors at Ophthalmology Associates. Dr. Greg Birdie, Dr. Ranjan Malhotra, Dr. Robert Brasati, and Dr. Andrew Royer are called the doctors because more doctors trust them than anyone else when it comes to their eyes. So, shouldn't you trust them? So give them a call, 314-966-5000, set up your appointment, learn about what insurance takes care of if you haven't had an annual eye exam in a while. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. The doctors at Ophthalmology Associates, 314-966-5000, or on the web at youreyedoc.com. Tell them that Chris Raby sent you. Go see the doctors at Ophthalmology Associates. Let's talk a little golf with Rick Gaiman from rickrungood.com. All right, Rick Gaiman joins us, the RBC Heritage this weekend following the Masters as the PGA Tour heads to Hilton Head, South Carolina. Rick, what's going on, man?
Chris, yeah, good to chat. I was just telling you there is kind of this Masters hangover, a major championship hangover that we get, but it's actually pretty easy to get through this week. Fun little course, great field. This is going to be a good one.
And the fact that we turn the page to the PGA Championship in a month,
which I'm going to be on site for, and I'm very excited about
this. I saw you tweet that. Wow, man. Kiowa. Fantastic.
Yeah, my first time back out on a course in quite some time, so I'm looking forward to it.
All right, so we leave Augusta National and head to the RBC, and I guess the first thing is this golf course and the way that this golf course plays, the fact that we always have Dustin Johnson at this golf course. No Bryson DeChambeau as he withdraws. But your initial take on the field, Rick, as we get ready for the action this weekend.
Field strong. I think that I saw that half of the Masters field is playing this week. So 44 of the 88 made the trek. Maybe it's down to 43 now with Bryson DeChambeau withdrawing on a Monday. We've got a lot of guys who have ties to RBC. So there's a little bit of sponsor obligation. But this is a course that it allows a lot of people, a lot of different players to be involved. It is allowed some long shots. It's kind of just different. It's very unique. We can talk about that too, but it's a staple, Chris. It's a staple on the PGA Tour. It's a great, well-run event, and it really gets a lot of star power.
Rick Gaiman with us, rickrungood.com. Yeah, yeah. How about the course? What do you like about it, Rick? And what does the course and the course setup allow for in terms of different type of players, in terms of the wind patterns and what those can do to affect the tournament? Because we could have all different kinds of tournaments throughout the 4 days. We've seen that in recent history as well.
That's absolutely right. So we've got a course that is arguably, I think it is the most unique course on the PGA Tour. Maybe Kapalua is another one, but this is kind of the opposite of that. This is a really narrow fairways that are not only tree lined, but there are a lot of times where you're in the fairway, these trees overhang into the fairway. So you could be in the fairway and still not have a great look at the green or a great angle. And then these are some of the smallest greens on the PGA Tour. They're 3,700 square feet on average. Only Pebble Beach is smaller than that at 3,500 square feet. So it really is kind of a different skill set than what we see from most events on the PGA Tour. And you mentioned, Chris, you know, it allows everybody to contend. You know, we've seen just in three of the last 4 years, CT Pan has won, Satoshi Kodaira has won, and Wesley Bryan has won. Obviously, Webb Simpson is our defending champion. That was a June spot on the calendar. Last year, there was no wind whatsoever. They went out and they shattered the scoring record. Probably not going to see that now that we're back in its traditional April slot. The winds tend to kick up. It's not as favorable. So I think scoring will be a bit tempered this week.
Rick Gaiman with us. RickRungood.com is the website. You know, you look at the card this week, Rick, and you mentioned the strength of the field. We've got maybe some biases each way in terms of the Masters. Some guys who played well coming off Augusta, some guys who did not play well, including some of the big names. How do you factor those in, and what do you expect in terms of maybe an ownership percentage alteration for some of the recency bias that inherently I think we'll see displayed?
Yeah, so Dustin Johnson is very interesting. He is not getting much love from anyone. In fact, depending on what book you look at, Dustin Johnson might not be the favorite. Webb Simpson might be, and that is rare. Usually anytime Dustin Johnson tees it up, he has the shortest odds, and it's usually not even close. But I think that is being factored in. Not only he has not played particularly well at this event in his career, but he's also in the midst of a stretch that hasn't been all that good. You know, he didn't play well at the WGC. He didn't play all that well at the Players. He didn't make it out of his group at the Match Play. And then, of course, he misses the cut at the Masters. So public sentiment pretty down on Dustin Johnson at the moment. And then I think public sentiment pretty down on Patrick Cantlay. You know, this is a guy that myself included thought that he was going to roll to Augusta National in the excellent form that he was in. He didn't play well on Thursday, kind of played himself out on Thursday, never got anything going on Friday. Friday's round was a little bit better, had at least birdie putts. None of them fell. But I think that a lot of us got burned by Cantlay this week, and there's not much desire to go back to him the exact following week.
Does the DJ thing, even if the odds are still short, Rick, does that fall into our... if you're getting extra value on the best guy in the golf tournament, you have to take it? I see him right now, you know, still, even if you get a 12 or an 11, that's still a pretty good number when you consider, you know, some of the guys underneath him. Do you subscribe to that at all, or is that still a bit short for your liking?
I'm more bullish than average on Dustin Johnson. So if it was like an excitement scale of 1 to 10, and 10, I'm running to the window to bet him, I'm like a 6. I'm like better than average excited for Dustin Johnson. I think that, you know, his record around here hasn't been all that good. His best finish is a T16 in his 5 trips, but he did have 1 year where he was the 54 hole leader and shot like just unexplainable. He shot like a 77 or a 78 and kind of played himself out of the tournament. So I think DJ's record is not as bad as it looks on paper. And we know that this guy can flip a switch and win a golf tournament at any moment. So I do think there is a hair of value there. I would, you know, again, I'm a 6 out of 10 on it right now.
All right, before I ask you about the DraftKings card and a couple of guys that we'll focus on, how about Will Zalatoris? If you talk about recency, it might not be bias. He's just unbelievable. Seeing his odds fall now, I see him as low as 25 to 1. What do you make of the 24-year-old's performance last week at Augusta, and how do you expect him to continue to roll along?
He's incredible. He's doing it everywhere. He's finishing inside the top 10 at Winged Foot. He does it at Augusta National. That's a place where you're supposed to have a lot of experience. He does it at tropical courses with weak fields. He does it at Torrey Pines, which is another difficult course. I mean, just, it doesn't matter. And what I love about Zalatoris is he really didn't seem to be all that pressured. You know, he didn't feel it on Sunday. He was just going out there playing golf. He played really well. He posted the clubhouse lead before Hideki ends up, you know, nipping him by one shot. lot. But what I love about Will Zalatoris, and this week's kind of weird, Chris, because Zalatoris is not accurate off the tee. He does not hit a lot of fairways, which is usually a huge detriment here. But I will say this, he leans into the data more than most guys on the PGA Tour, this up and coming class. So he just bombs it knowing, hey, distance and missing the fairway is better than being shorter and being in the fairway. He's going to have to take a little bit of a different approach this week, which I think he's absolutely capable of doing. We know how precise he is with his irons. We know that he can be accurate. So I just love everything about this kid. He is proving to be a real stud. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. And leaning into the whole Mr. Gilmore, I'm your caddy thing on social media.
Yeah, that's pretty
good.
Can only
help him. So give us an idea, Rick, as you look at the DraftKings card, of maybe where you're looking towards the top of the card and maybe a couple of plays a little bit further down that you like if we're starting to build out some lineups.
Sure. So I think the top, Colin Morikawa certainly calls my name, Webb Simpson, of course, as well. But Morikawa is the blueprint. You know, he's a guy who just hits a ton of fairways. He's absolutely elite, the best ball striker that we have on the PGA Tour. And if he can get that putter going, watch out, because he's won four times in his last 39 starts, which is just an incredible pace that he's on at the moment. There's also another guy in the 10K range. I got to tell you, Chris, Cam Smith. I like Cam Smith, not at 10,200. This is the most expensive I could find in my database, which goes back 4 years for Cam Smith. I actually think it's a pricing error. So as much as I love the guy, 10,200 is a bit expensive for my taste. Going a little bit further down, Paul Casey is 92. He is, again, one of these great accurate ball strikers. He's going to put himself in the fairway off the tee. What he did at the Masters last week is he was terrible with the putter for 3 days. He changed his grip on Sunday and he was phenomenal. He shot the third lowest round of the day. He went left hand low. I'm hoping he continues that this week, because I think he could be a guy that if he can marry the putter with the rest of his game, he's super scary.
I don't think I could even consider changing my putting grip while I'm shooting 92, you know, from the middle tees. So I am sometimes in awe of the way these guys embrace and are willing to make adjustments. I suppose it's no different than, you know, to some extent, a halftime adjustment made during a basketball or a football game. But, you know, for those of us who know how weird that can feel sometimes, and I'm not comparing my skill set, maybe yours, to Paul Casey's, it's pretty remarkable. And oftentimes, the guys that are willing to adapt are the ones that have success.
You know, and it is interesting. Sometimes when it happens in the middle, I've heard the idea that when it happens in the middle of the event, it's out of desperation. It is just like, I'm going to try something. I'm searching for whatever. And there's a chance he does not put that back into play this week, because, you know, when guys make longer term switches, they usually work on it for weeks and months before they put it into action. So we'll see. Fingers crossed Paul Casey goes left hand low. If he doesn't, he's still just absolutely phenomenal from tee to green. Maybe he gets hot with the putter with his conventional grip.
RickRungood.com is the website. RickRungood.com. That's where you go. You can catch Rick all over the place. The First Cut podcast as well, which is required listening after each round. Rick, appreciate it, brother, and enjoy the tournament this weekend. We'll talk next week.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
All right. A big thanks to Rick and a big thanks to Scott Miller. Thanks also to Ophthalmology Associates, the doctor's doctors, Dr. Greg Birdie, Dr. Ranjan Malhotra, Dr. Robert Bersatti, and Dr. Andrew Royer. We broadcast from the Ophthalmology Associates studios. That's going to do it for another edition of the Chris Raby Show on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. We'll be back tomorrow with a little more baseball talk and a draft and some food and other talk with Drew Silva. Until then, Chris Raby saying, be nice to each other, and as always, peace!